Still to come on Counterpoint, it was a compelling idea. In the digitalised world, there's more money to be made from niche culture than blockbusters. But the evidence tells a more gloomy story.
You're listening to Counterpoint here on ABC Radio National.
Now, a few years ago, a book appeared called The Long Tail. It got quite a bit of attention from people interested in culture. The author was one Chris Anderson, who's editor-in-chief of the rather good Wired magazine.
Now, he claims that in a digitalised world, blockbusters in fields such as music and film would see their influence decline as people turn to a wider range of more interesting works of art.
Many people accepted Anderson's thesis until this year, Harvard economist Anita Elberst decided to test it. And she did this with the assistance of Stephen Langsford. Stephen is head of the Australian DVD mail order company QuickFlix. And Stephen and Anita join us now. I talked to them recently. I asked Anita for a summary of Anderson's book, The Long Tail.
My reading of his book is that he's making two arguments. One is he's saying that there's an enormous abundance of products being offered in online channels, and this is leading to a very long tail, if you will, of products. So if you would rank products by their sales, the top-ranked products are in the head. There's an enormous amount of products that sell only a few copies, and this tail of products is getting longer and longer. And so that's his first observation. And that's because it's just cheaper to stock products online, and it's cheaper or easier for people to search products online. And another argument that he's making is because this is all available online, people will actually start to move away from the hits and will start to consume more niche products.
In a sense, he's talking about the effects of digitalization and the internet, is he, on established markets?
Exactly, that's right.
And of course, he's also talking about their impact on culture, isn't he?
Right. I think one of his quotes is that people are moving away from what we call a water cooler era, where people come and gather and talk about the same products or the same popular culture that they've seen on TV or that they've listened to on the radio or consumed otherwise, are moving to a situation in which everyone is in their own niche and consuming what best matches their taste.
I know his book had a quite extraordinary response. It was well received, I'd say, in magazines and reviews around the world. Maybe one of the reasons for that is that the sort of diversity he was suggesting we're going to encounter is very appealing to many of the sorts of people who are involved in the media.
Right, I think that's right. It's a very optimistic message.
Now, Anita, even though the book The Long Tail, which came out a few years ago, was very positively received on the whole, you decided to test it. Why did you decide that?
Well, I think precisely because it was so successful and because everyone that I talked to in the entertainment industry was thinking about the book and was thinking about implications of the long tail for their business, and people were increasingly judging new business plans based on the long tail hypothesis. And it dawned on me that this is a very interesting idea, but there's actually quite little evidence that would support, or at least that I knew of, that would support these hypotheses. In his book, he presents very little empirical evidence, and so I got in touch with Chris Anderson to see if we could form a partnership and actually study some of his ideas in more depth.
So, Anita, what did you find?
Well, I think I found two main things. Well, first, I think I found confirmation of the fact that that there is indeed a very long tail, and that the tail is getting longer and longer, meaning that online channels facilitate the offering of an enormous amount of products. So that I think was sort of the benchmark. But what I found, while the tail is getting longer, it's also getting flatter and flatter. So most, like the vast majority of products in the tails sell very, very little, or rent very, very little. And so that was one. And then another, if I look more at sort of who is in the tail and how are people liking the tail, I found that there's actually people have less of a taste for obscure products than some of the long-tail enthusiasts seem to think. So what we see is people who, for example, are very light buyers of a category, so people who might rent only one or two DVDs a month, they tend to occupy the head much more than the tail. So light buyers are monopolized by the more popular products. And people tend to like products that are popular more. So it's sort of a double whammy. Not only are popular products more popular, they're also more appreciated.
And when we talk about the head of the tail, we're really talking about current or recent hits or bestsellers, aren't we?
Exactly, yes.
Stephen, can you tell us how does that fit in with your experience?
Well, one observation we have with QuickFlix is that in any month over 85% of our 33,000 titles today are requested to people's queues. So that's a fairly top-level representation of the long tail at work. And but your observation of, or Anita's observation there, that the latest released and most popular titles certainly represent the most in-demand titles of Quickflix's range. But of course, so if I took the top 100 titles of the 33,000 titles that we have on offer, they will be the latest releases and the titles most in demand. The difference is, however, that those top 100 titles represent less than 18% of the total demand of titles out of Quickflix. If I contrasted that to the local video store, the top 100 titles probably, I'm only guessing now, but probably represent something like 60 or 70% of total demand. And of course, I've read Chris Anderson's book. He explains in that book, or draws the example of back in the 50s, I Love Lucy, I think, was the top billing TV series in the US, where 75% of the viewing audience every week would tune into I Love Lucy, whereas last year the top billing TV series in the US was CSI, of which I think 25% of the viewing audience would tune into that. And that's because his theory goes that we are presented with many, many more choices now than what you were presented with back in the 50s.
The question that I think informed my research more than anything else is this changing anything for a producer, right? It's clear that there are enormous benefits for retailers, for the Quickflixes of this world, or for the large retailer here in the U.S., the Amazons of this world. The question is, what does it do to a Hollywood studio? Should they actually start to make different types of bets? Should they still try to make the next Rocky, or should they invest the $100 million that they otherwise would invest in one movie? Should they spread that out over a much larger number of smaller movies? Mm. And there, my conclusion is directly opposite what Chris Anderson would suggest. We're not moving to a situation in which it makes sense for those producers of content to focus on the niches. In fact, more and more, they benefit from betting even more on the hits.
And in fact, you suggest that if one is looking for a book that accurately describes what you found, maybe one should go back to 1995 and look at a book called The Winner Takes All Society.
Exactly. And it's interesting that this was before the internet obviously became that important, but they do talk about electronic communication being a driver of more concentration, of more of a winner-take-all market.
Do you have any idea why this would seem to be the case? Why, given technological development and what people thought of as the promise of more diversity, we actually appear to be often getting more concentration?
There are a number of forces that are underlying that trend to sort of a winner-take-all market. One is that it's still the lesser talent is no substitute for greater talent, right? If we have a choice between, if we have a limited amount of time, which most of us do, and we have a choice between Pavarotti and a lesser opera singer, most of us choose Pavarotti. So it doesn't make sense to try to go for lesser talent. And also what we see in markets for popular culture is that it's very easy to reproduce something. It's very expensive to make one movie, but then to make copies of that movie, it's actually quite inexpensive. So that favors the more popular products because they can spread their costs over more copies. And then also what we talked about earlier, this idea that we have a tendency to share our experiences. We actually enjoy talking about movies. So I have an interest in consuming the same movies that you do because then we can actually talk about them. And those three forces and a bunch more are actually causing this move towards a market that is increasingly concentrated.
Anita Elbers there, Associate Professor in Business Administration at the Harvard Business School. And we heard also from Stephen Langsford, who's the Executive Director of Quickflix.